right, and this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. The previous program was Clearing the Fog with Dr. Margaret Flowers, and that is heard Tuesdays at 6 p.m. It is now 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Voices of Resistance coming up. Here we go.
Vieron llegar mis hermanos emplumados, eran los hombres barbados de la profecía esperada. Se oyó la voz del monarca de que el Dios había llegado y les abrimos la puerta por temor a lo ignorado. Iban montados en bestias como demonios del mal, iban con fuego en las manos y cubiertos de metal. Solo el valor de unos cuantos les opuso resistencia, y al mirar correr la sangre se llenaron de vergüenza, porque los dioses ni comen ni gozan con lo robado. Cuando nos dimos cuenta ya todo estaba acabado, y en ese error entregamos la grandeza del pasado, y en ese error nos quedamos 300 años esclavos. Se nos quedó el maleficio de brindar cultura, nuestro pan, nuestro dinero, y hoy le seguimos cambiando oro por cuentas de vidrio, y damos nuestra riqueza por sus espejos con brillo. Hoy en pleno siglo XX siguen llegando rubios y les abrimos la casa y los llamamos amigos, pero si llega cansado un indio de andar la sierra, lo humillamos y lo vemos como extraño por su tierra.
Good afternoon to our listeners of Voices of Resistance at WBAI 99.5 FM, New York. The song you just called is, the song you just heard is called Maldición de Malinche, or Malinche's Curse, interpreted by Gabino Palomares and Amparo Ochoa from the New Song Movement of Mexico. It is now 7:04 p.m. and I'm still feeling like we're in our new schedule, although by now everybody should know that this is our schedule for now, Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. My name is Lucy Paguada Quesada. I am a teacher, and I'm the official coordinator of the Libre Party, U.S., Canada, and Costa Rica. And as you know, the Libre Party is the political arm of the Honduran Resistance, and it is coordinated in Honduras by President Manuel Zelaya, who was overthrown from power via a U.S.-backed coup in 2009 under the administration of President Barack Obama and his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. President Joe Biden was the vice president at that time. Fortunately, in 2021, after overcoming two U.S.-backed electoral frauds, we were able to finally take the presidency of Honduras back, and we elected the first woman president. So in Honduras, we are not new to this idea of having a woman president, just like the Mexican people are going to inaugurate their woman president this coming up October, Claudia Sheinbaum. And in Honduras in 2001, we elected President Xiomara Castro. And as I was mentioned yesterday in this beautiful forum that we had reporting back from Honduras about our experience in Foro de Sao Paulo and CELAC Social, which happened last June 27th, 28th, and 29th in Tegucigalpa, Latin America right now has a very interesting phenomenon of women in the highest levels of power. And we are talking about women as presidents, women as vice presidents, such as the case of Colombia with the first Black woman president, Compañera Francia Márquez, as well as in Nicaragua, we have a vice president, Rosario Murillo. And in Venezuela, we have a vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, and like that. If we look at the political systems that are going on right now, especially governments of progressive movements, like the one in Honduras, we see women completely in power. So that's very inspirational, and it's a very beautiful thing. You know, especially when it comes to women that are leading governments that are not just governments of bipartisan, but rather governments that are progressive, leftist, socialist, anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, you know, governments that are pro-people. So that's a very beautiful thing. We need to make a distinction, a big distinction between what it means to just become a woman president in a bipartisan system, whereas where does it really mean to become a woman president or a vice president in a government that was born out of a process of the people, for the people, and by the people. So how you doing, Andrea? It's good to be back on our program. How you feeling? How you doing on during your vacation?
I am energized. It doesn't feel like I'm on vacation. I am on academic pause to do political activism, and it's pretty exciting to do that. Hello, everyone. I'm Andrea Vizeu. I'm a teacher here in New York City, like Companheira Lucy. I'm from Brazil. I mobilized with the people from the Workers' Party, Partido dos Trabalhadores, and also, you know, in anything that matters in this culture, in this country, like pro-Palestine, Black Lives Matter. If, you know, the people call, I'll answer. We need to do what we need to do to make this work. Trying to get into my tablet, so I have to get her out. Sorry. Yeah, that was that. I am so sorry. Anyway, yes, yesterday was very exciting. We had this forum where we discussed our trip to the CELAC Social, the social CELAC, and Foro de São Paulo in Honduras. And we had some very interesting, powerful conversations about migration, about elections. There's elections in Venezuela in 5 minutes, minus 1 day on Sunday. Today's the 23rd, Sunday the 28th. Our companheiros of Venezuela are taking to the streets, and the people from what we gather are going to confirm again, Nicolás Maduro. It's been very interesting to see how the people of Bolivia and Peru are resisting the attempted coups that they keep on trying to do over niobium and lithium. So it's been an interesting summer. I'm looking forward to going to Brazil soon and having some technical issues, but nothing that prevents us from being here. Hi, Reggie. How are you? Hello, everyone at WBAI. Please support us. We need Free Speech Radio. Lucy?
Yes. Thank you so much, Andrea. And you're right. This is a big summer and a big year of elections. Two important elections are taking place. one here in the United States. So our main topics, we have two main topics today, elections 2024, U.S. imperialist mockery in the ballot. We've been seeing the show is going on and it just keeps going and going. And we see how corporate media is making such a frenzy out of the whole political show. But really, what is in for the people? We want to find out. This is why we've been holding on to having this program about the analysis, what is going on. And so today we have a special guest. We'll introduce him in just a minute. But we're also going to be looking, as you were saying, we're going to be looking at the elections in Venezuela, which are happening next Sunday. And obviously, these elections only speak about the consolidation of the Bolivarian Revolution. And as you say, Andrea, one election at a time, and this revolution since 1999 has been happening, and it continues to be consolidated. So we're very excited about that. And we're going to be looking at the differences. What are the differences between what we see happening in the United States and what we see happening in Venezuela? That's a very interesting questions to ask. Go ahead.
I want to salute our compañera Terry Mattson, a friend of Venezuela, a friend of our program. Today, she rang the bell for being cancer-free, and it makes me very moved. She had 23 treatments, and today was the last day of that. So our sister is cancer-free, and we salute her. We are very happy, and we share your love for life, and we wish you all the best from our program. Terry Mattson, we love you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Terry is a sister. She's a sister in struggle. She's an internationalist, a true revolutionary who's out there always doing the walk, not just talking the talk, even though sometimes her talks, or most of the time the talks are amazing too, just like our talk. You know, we do the talk and we do the walk as well. Thank you, Andrea, for bringing that topic on. I had already not known completely, but I knew that she was going through some very, very tough moments. I just didn't know she made it public. So I'm very happy that you are making it, a public appreciation, and that she knows how much we love her, how much we appreciate her. And I think that she's only going to come back stronger for whatever it is. She's just going to come back stronger to the struggle as we need her. So, yeah, thank you so much. So today we have with us one very special guest. We're going to be having this beautiful conversation with compañero Neptha Freeman. And who is our special guest? Neptha is not new to our program. He's been to our program before. He's from the Black Alliance for Peace. Neptha Freeman is an organizer in Pan-African Community Action, PACA, and co-coordinator of the Black Alliance for Peace for Peace Africa's team, and is also co-host and producer of the WPFW radio show and podcast Voices with Vision. So his program has a very similar name than ours, although, and the approaches, about speaking truth to power is very similar as well. We feel very, very happy and proud to have you with us today in our program. And we're very happy that you were actually able to make it tonight. So welcome, compañero Neptha. How are you doing?
Thank you.
Welcome to Voices of Resistance.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on again. Thank you, Lucy. Thank you, Andrea. So it's great to be back.
Thank you so much. And you are here in giving an email in case people want to contact you. Neptha@blackallianceforpeace.com. Neptha@blackallianceforpeace.com in case people have questions, further questions. But we always invite our audience to call us in. They can call in and join our conversation. They can call in by calling 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877, and they can join our conversation. They can make a comment or ask the question. And so, this is what public radio is about, and it's how we make it together, not just our program, but it's everybody's program. So
we need you to speak up a little bit. Your voice is coming through very fast. We need you to.
Okay, how's that? Is that better?
Better, yes, Reggie?
Okay, so let's begin with what is going on in the United States. Everybody is, well, at least people say like the world is watching what's happening in the United States. And, you know, it's just, it seems like a lot of theater happening. We understand that, we didn't get to where we are as a country just by pure, miracle. It is all part of a process. It is all part of the decaying of a system that can no longer withstand itself. And we see it clearly. Now, the issue is, you know, how are we going to move forward? But let's just begin by asking, how did we get here? How did we get to a place where really the people do not have any options? We don't have any options. Bipartisan stopped being an option for the working class for a long time, but now we see it more and more. The average person on the street is telling us, you know, I don't even know if I'm going to vote. I don't even know if it makes a difference to vote. Before, people used to be hopeful going from one party to another. Now it's like people are beginning to understand or understanding more and more that this is like a dead end. So how did we get to this dead end?
And before, you know, continue Lucy's question, if you could talk to us about those friends who tell us that if we do not vote Republican or Democrat, we are electing the opposition. When do the real people have a voice in this country, especially with electoral college?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is a very, it's a broad question. I won't say it's complicated. It's not, maybe it is some complexity to it, but I think it's more, intricate than it is complicated. It's a difference. And I do agree. I mean, we first started off saying, well, these, you know, what people are looking at when it comes to this electoral politics seems like theater. I agree. I might even use the word antics instead of theater because it's antics. And it is a logical conclusion of where things are starting really with, and this is, I think, very important for us to remember when we talk about the interests that are served by this state, that this is a settler colonial project. It was founded on the enslavement of and the colonization of indigenous people and the kidnapping of a big majority population of African people from Africa, and was began to develop one of the most exploitative systems. You know, the working class has been exploited. And so throughout this history of the United States, the electoral process has always, it's even its founding. And you mentioned the Electoral College, even the founding of the design of the process was specifically and intentionally meant to exclude, you know, everyone except for rich white men, you know, and that was basically it. If you're not rich, you're not white, you're not a man, that was it. It wasn't supposed to include you. And the Electoral College was specifically designed to give this the right to participate in the policy to land owning white men. And so as the system evolved, there were some nominal and mostly cosmetic changes to include. And as, you know, the rights of people, you know, expanded only superficially, though, we have to remember that all the way up to today, the essential feature of settler colonialism, which in this country is three hydra of capitalism, white supremacy, and patriarchy. It's a settler project. It's a settler colonial project with the colonization of, and so those of us who are African and those of us who are non-white, we are a domestic colony here. And so that means our relationship to the state, to the power structure, to all of the institutions, even to, and most importantly, to international finance capital here is one of a colonized, exploited people whose only purpose, you know, too, is when we can work for it and make profits off it. And to the extent that we can't do that, we're expendable population. And so I'm talking about any all indigenous people, all that, you know, and even those who are immigrants who may come to this, they're calling, you know, this landmass as immigrants, largely due to policies in the places where they come from that are imposed on their countries by the United States. And this goes all the way back. You all are familiar, I'm sure you've talked about on Voices of Resistance, the Monroe Doctrine and things mm-hmm. of that nature. And so this is what we're looking at. Now, as we get to the, you know, I think the, how your question applies to right now is that we've seen all types of transformations and evolutions of this system of capitalism, neoliberalism, as we might call it. I think you call it where the, you know, just the policies and the state enacting policies and also the confluence of capital on the power structure at, designed to increase or maximize the profits of corporations and whatnot. And that, you know, the illusion of free, of laissez-faire, free market is, you know, is that's what neoliberalism is against. It's actually where, you know, even in many ways, the state it isn't a hands-off policy. It actually implements policy, but only in the interest of capitalism and imperialism. And so now as the masses of people within this country, you know, yearning for what masses of people do, you know, human rights and happiness, better standards of living and things like that, that we can even see in the socialist countries that you mentioned that are afforded to the people. These are human rights, the right to healthcare, education, the right to a place to live, you know, and even the right to work and contribute.
Good.
You know. Food, healthy, you know, food, security, healthy food, all of these things are not rights here. Under neoliberalism, those are all commodities and you don't have a right to them. And as people struggle for that, then we increasingly see, things that are tantamount to an increased fascism. Now, I would like to say that, all the characteristics of fascism have always existed under settler colonialism. There's nothing about fascism that's unique to the colonized, that's exceptional. You know, that has not experienced fascism for the most part, how it's generally used. I mean, think of these individuals from Torrio to Franco to Mussolini and Hitler and all these people, how it's generally used is when the characterizations, the characteristics of colonialism and enslavement and whatnot are applied to white people. Then they call it it's fascism. But for us, you know, these are things now. I'm not, you know, saying that there's not a change in the application and the sophistication of mm-hmm. policies of fascism, because that is, it is being more sophisticated. And at the same time, it has one of them is the ability to leverage propaganda against people and spin things and make people think that things are in their own best interest, make them think there's an other to be afraid of, make them think that the rulers are you know, that the rulers are the only, and the system is the only way, only thing, the only option. This is why the two capitalist parties, and it's a duopoly now, that people believe, well, I have to vote for a Republican or a Democrat because there's nothing else. Any other option is demonized, is criminalized, is repressed. And we've seen that throughout the history of this country. That's why there are political prisoners in this country, the longest held political prisoners on the planet or in the United States. And so, you know, and well, where there was the, many people would be familiar with the COINTELPRO, the FBI's COINTELPRO program, which was, you know, the security state coming down and railroading people into prison and all kinds of things that, and propaganda and infiltration, that was illegal at the time, but it's found different manifestations. Even again, it merged after 9/11 and the Patriot Act, and they just made it legal. And so now we're seeing different forms of that, and where the people, it actually has, and let me just wrap up this. I'm sorry for going so long. Well, I'll just say this one last thing about the system here, particularly the election process and where, how we got to. In order for the system, for people to believe, because the to continue with this system, the most opportunist elements rise to the top. To be, you know, they can't allow any legitimate candidates, anybody who really works for the people, any chance of fulfilling these, any positions of power. Both the Democratic and Republican parties attract pretty much opportunists. People who are out for themselves can talk all good if they want to, but that's really the Democrats' role, say all kind of stuff, but they really can't speak like like the leaders that you mentioned. Like when we say, you know, women and other people are emerging to the top, they can't talk about climate change in any intelligent way, or how, you know, why the poverty is, what the root cause of that, and how to change these things. And so we get people who seem like a joke for them to be candidates. You know, they seem so unserious, and the rest of the world is looking inside the United States. How can you even let people like Donald Trump be, you know, the most, like the most popular person? And even on the Democratic Party ticket, Kamala Harris is just not, she's not anything that's in the best interest or of our people, and does not represent the best of any of woman of color or black women. So these are that's what happens here, because it's just not designed to allow real people-centered systems to emerge.
We talk about meritocracy, right? I mean, this is the country where the American dream can happen. So if you look at someone like Barack Obama or Kamala Harris, one would think, oh, they earned their way to the top. And if they can do it, everybody can do it. But that's not so. And what ends up happening, and I wanted to comment on that, like we have people like Barack Obama in 2008, 2009, spying on countries in Latin America as a president, authorizing that to happen in order to survive, and sponsoring coups. Our program has been on the air for the last almost 7 years, and every night, Lucy says, you know, the coup in Honduras under the administration of President Barack Obama. Being people of color and claiming some rights that are the rights of the people, like all of a sudden we have an appellation, vice president candidate, a single mother's son, you know, they capitalize on our demands for a more decent life to appear like us. Can you comment there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a, you know, very, I think, astute and important observation. What the last part of what you mentioned is a strategy called encapsulation the state has. So encapsulation as what it really refers to is when the people become so dissatisfied that there is revolutionary fervor enough that threatens the status quo, that they, that the powers that be will create formations, movements, individuals, organizations that seem to appear to be the same as representing the interests of the mass of the people, but they don't. They represent something else, and they'll even implement institute, like, you know, responses. Like, and I give one of the examples would be during the Black, what we refer to as the Black Lives Matter movement, particularly after George Floyd, and even Black Lives Matter in general. They just start, you know, of Michael Brown, the foundations threw money at stuff. Everything was like they sloganized, and, you know, Black Lives Matter became this hashtag, and a lot of organizations with very liberal, weak strategies or goals or objectives came to capture the hearts and minds of the movement and the people really wanting freedom and justice and whatnot, liberation. Just same thing with George Floyd. People might find it disparaging, but we heard a lot about defund the police. You know, something that seemed like really, when you think about it, was ridiculous. They're not going to defund their frontline shock troops that keep that are the buffer between them and the people that want something. They're not going to do that. And it became a demand that would never be fulfilled. And as you can hear now, it's nowhere. Right. And so all of the mobilizations that were happening, even that were representative of the indignation of the people about what's happening to them, those cannot be sustained. And when the four powers that be inject their influence into it, it cannot transform into a more revolutionary, permanent, protracted force like it should be, or like it should be able to. And so in this country, and then they propagandize us all the time to think that this is the country with opportunity and anyone can be like Obama or whatever. And they'll use these things.
Oprah Winfrey.
This identity politics. If anyone, if someone is a black person or someone's a woman or someone's LGBTQ, Latina, whatever, they can emerge, they represent any one person represents the possibility for everybody. But it's an illusion. You can't represent that. Because the moment you really start talking about something that is people-centered, that is internationalist, that is anti-exploitation, anti-war and all that, you will not make it. In fact, you know, unless before they vetted anybody who can even run for the highest offices in the land is carefully vetted by the system. You won't even know who that person is. You will never hear of them if they stand for anything that they think remotely threatens the possibility of sustaining the system. And so they make sure that the only people we see, and we just have to, even if we think about the nomination process and the elections, we're not really nominating people. You know, there's a bunch of, some people, there's the rich people find and they put them before us and say, here, choose. These are your selections and you choose from who's given to us. That's what this is about, you know, and in both parties. And so, you know, it's an illusion.
To continue with your talk,
before we even know who wins the Democratic Convention, we know that superdelegates, which are the super rich people, are determining that is someone that has the faith of the Black community, but maybe not their best interest at large because of her history as a prosecutor. Sorry, Lucy, go.
No, that's okay. And that's why we saw yesterday in less than 24 hours, it was millions and millions of dollars already being poured into the campaign. So who is pouring those millions of dollars? It's not NEPTA and I and Andrea, because we don't have those kind of millions. We don't have that kind of money. So we have to ask ourselves, who are the ones investing in that new administrator of the system? Because at the end of the day, it's really what they're looking for. Not a candidate that is going to work for anybody, but an administrator of the capitalist system. We're going to go listen to a song. And when we come back, well, our beautiful song for today is Redemption Songs. Redemption Songs, right? That's all I ever had. Because when we come back, Nefta, we want to talk a little bit about the Bolivarian doctrine versus the Monroe Doctrine. Because in Latin America, you know, that was figured out so many years ago, the fact that bipartisan was not the thing and that the U.S. system was not the thing for the people. And Bolivar knew it well too well, right? He knew it so many years ago. And Chavez, when he realized what was going on, what Bolivar was trying to say, he was like, this is where we need to go. And this is where President Maduro is leading with the Bolivarian Revolution today. So we want to talk a little bit about that and just comparing and contrasting a little bit the two systems. Let's go and listen to Redemption Songs. And then when we come back, you can give us your impression of the song and then we'll move on with our beautiful discussion. Okay. Thank you so much.
And ships minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. You help to sing these songs of freedom, 'cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside?
say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book.
Emancipate ourselves from mental slavery. But we got to fulfill the book. Most countries.
Isn't that what we're doing, Andrea? Somehow, in some way, right, Nepa? That's what we're doing? In some ways, maybe?
Yeah. Elections in most countries are mandatory. In this country, we are free to vote. Right? But we need to fulfill the book. I'm seeing a lot of my Latino job, my Black job is to vote. Nessa, comment on the song and take this off.
Well, this is the classic. You know, I don't remember I heard this song. I just got to, you know, listen to it. It's a classic. And he's saying some deep stuff there. One thing I like is none but ourselves can free our minds. And then we talked about we forward in this generation. In other words, you know, we were stolen from Africa and colonized on, put everywhere. And despite all of that, we still went forward. There's still admirable expressions of our resistance, of our endurance and whatnot. And so I think that's one. And then, and to not get caught up into the none but ourselves can free our minds means that, you know, we have to, our revolutionary forces have to have programs of enlightenment, of political consciousness raising, political education, and some would say spiritual. I might be saying spiritual person. This is my personal thing. I'm not a religious person, and I think he might, you know, there's some religion there with Bob Marley, but I think the message is universally applicable and can be appreciated regardless of that. And so some people, you know, their spirituality, which I think is the only way to really, or their religion, which I think is the only way to apply religion, is for it to be consistent with revolution. And revolution and religion, if those things are separate, then you're going to have something that's just going to only confuse the people. And so your revolution, to me, revolutionary religious principles have to be about, you know, fostering a greater humanity, a greater connection between people, the greater harmony. That's what religion, the word means, that the etymology of the word. So, but you have people here that want to, you know, manipulate it and use it to manipulate people and that's why in the words, though, I appreciate the lyrics, none but ourselves can free our minds. We can't look for people who want to give us false prophets, you know, and profits in, and actually two different words, profits.
But
like
that applies completely to what we're talking about in terms of these leaders that they want to bring, right, and make us think, okay, that's it. We got the person that is going to make the difference, right? It's just all of a sudden it comes like, wow, here it is. And we know, we know it's not true. Some of us do. Do you think that a lot of people don't, or many do? What do you think?
Don't what?
Don't know that it's all a farce.
I think that a lot, it's interesting. That's a good question. When we, I, when we think about the elections, I think it's very telling that people don't really talk a lot about the statistics of the elections. Mm-hmm. I think most people, because our material conditions tell us more about anything than any promises and other words. Most people, it's almost half, and maybe they were able to dupe people into being a little less than half now, abstain from the electoral process altogether. And so when they talk about percentages, they're talking about registered voters. They're not even talking about anybody else. And they,
the revolution won't be televised. It talks about, 85% of 65% of the 26%. And I think if we look back today and compared to the data from the 1970 when Ronald Reagan was running, the 70s, it would be a much lower turnout. What?
Mm-hmm. You mean back then it was a much lower turnout?
It
was higher, right?
And
Reagan.
26,
I'm sorry, you're cutting out.
65% of 26%. That me. So basically in 77, whatever that was, 26% of the voters turned out, right? And out of the 26%, 65% voted for Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. The out today is even smaller.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because with this being a settler colonial state, we got to do some demographics analysis too. There's most of the people in this country that the largest majority is still white people. They've done a good job of exterminating indigenous people. And then of course those who they brought in and those immigrants are still not, and that they participate in the process. They have more faith in it. It does things. And now those demographics have been fast changing, which is why they get afraid. We've heard these reactionary policies and these reactionary concerns because the demographics are changing and they blame it and they fear that it's going to change things for them. But it does say something about the electoral process, and people's material conditions. So really to Lucy's questions about, I think a lot of people may not completely see everything we need them to see. They will actually help them be more of agents of their own destiny, the agents, be participants and be the solution that they need. Shouldn't be left to just one leader. This country helps us looking for leaders, but there has to be a process, much like we see in the revolutionary countries and Latin America and all that. There's participatory democracies. The projects involve all of the people. People are agents in their own change. And here the representative democracy tells people you just need to have the right leaders, the right elected officials and whatnot. And then they know that's not working out for them. So they might be demoralized and feel like the system's not working, but they don't have the added consciousness that it's up to them. It's up to us. We need to be the change we want to see. And we have to organize and enlighten ourselves.
That's why you're going a little bit ahead of what my next question is. And that is, so what do we need to do in the United States in order to get out of this vicious cycle of bipartisanship and every 4 years, the bipartisan system using the people to validate itself and go to the polls, whether it is 46% of the population that goes to vote or a little bit over 30% of the population that goes to vote. How do we get out of the cycle? Because really we've been in this cycle for over, a century now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how do we get out of the cycle? And you mentioned countries like Venezuela, which we're going to move to in just a minute to talk about what is going on there and the importance of the elections coming up this July 28th. And then, representative versus participatory democracy, real democracy. So how do we go about getting out of this vicious cycle that is so demeaning and, false for the people? And make it work for the people.
Right. If I can, I want to put I've had my PACA hat on, but I can speak for PACA in this instance and say what we're doing.
Please.
And what we believe. Because I think what I believe is the answer. So, I'm no guru. I get my answers from our people that we organize with. And one thing is it's no quick thing. Mm-hmm. And so we shouldn't reject the electoral process altogether. But often when we talk about the solutions to our problems, revolutionary perspective and analysis, we'll hear the slogan that it comes from our, Black Power days and everything. Organize. We got to be organized, organized. And so, but we want to take that beyond a slogan and give it some concrete meaning and material meaning. That means we have to join an organization that has a revolutionary program. And we have to pursue every project, every arena of struggle in an organized fashion. To the extent that we are not organized as a mass grouping, and I think in this country, because of the nature of it, Black people, we have to, African people of African descent need to organize, people of Latino and everything have to be organized. It doesn't mean we don't work together, but we realize our own, the interests coming and also pulling together the most impacted and marginalized of our people into the organization. And then we build coalitions and united fronts with other people that are anti-capitalist, anti all this stuff. We're internationalists. Because we have worked.
Not just joining the Democratic Party and thinking
that that's
what's
going to stay. These are enemies. These are enemy parties. They're enemies of humanity. I mean, we just got to put that out there. And people might kind of claim, oh, it's some kind of temporary thing. We got to do that. That's the least. Well, you can't defeat the enemy until you can't engage in a program of defeating the enemy while you're engaged in some so-called tactical alliance of promoting the enemy. That doesn't work. And this is a long-term process. We got to be about exposing and propaganda. Propagandizing. I say it for what it means. Politically educating our people to the nature of these parties, the nature of the system. And we have to start now. We can't wait. The longer we keep putting our eggs in the baskets of the Democrats or whatever, that means the longer we're putting off the political education and movement building that is needed to revolutionize our condition. And so that's just the way it is. So we can't say, well, we vote Democrat because the celestial too evil. Well, we can't defeat evil if we keep voting for one of the lesser or whatever. There's no way it can be defeated while we're trying to vote for some portion of it. So it doesn't make any sense then.
So continue your talk, because we are now at 10 minutes and we want to talk.
Oh, I'm going to stop that. Okay. So we just so the other part is that as we organize, the last part in terms of the electoral process, we just have to be organized and we have to engage in it with a collective organization with a platform that's revolutionary and that can challenge the legitimacy or the illegitimacy of the duopoly, the capitalist imperialist parties.
I wanted you to continue that thought, but I wanted you to know, here we talk about democracy, and we talk about how countries like Venezuela, like Juan Guaido, already put his wings out, like he wants to show up again, the never president of Venezuela. We talk about Venezuela not being democratic. Venezuela has had more than 50, I believe this is the 57th election in 13 years. It's more than 50 elections. Mm-hmm. For the people, for everything. There is people participation, yet propaganda in this country talks about, first about Chavez and then about Maduro as known as dictators, as non-democratic people.
Right.
My understanding of socialism is that we work with the people when we are doing things and we work for the people. In this culture, in this country, we end up getting small tokens. They're sampled in socialism, like some free housing, some health care, some, right? And the criticism, this gets offered to our people. We had a program in Honduras where we talked about migration, right? And how most of the people that choose to migrate, they come on a dream based on propaganda of a democracy that allows you to be who you want to be. So we have these two things. So if you could comment on, Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, now Honduras, the people's participation is there.
Mm-hmm. The right? people's. Yes. is there. I mean, I think part of our the political education we have to do with our people, not just around electoral process, but around everything, is to be internationalist and to understand, particularly understand better the countries that our enemies demonize. I mean, they're demonizing them for a reason. And they don't want us to understand what example they actually set for inside. And when you look at, and I know you all have, you've traveled before, and you know that a lot of the perspectives that are propagated so strongly within the United States, the other countries don't really see those countries in the same way as the Western countries do. It's pretty much in the U.S. and people, and they dissuade people from traveling. They leverage sanctions against those countries. In particular, we can talk, there's other countries, but in this case, Venezuela and Nicaragua and Cuba, to make sure the conditions are such that they can point to them and say, look, those conditions, that's because of socialism, that's because of oppression or whatever. And they're really from the conditions that they leverage, and they're using their international power to leverage and their sophistication, their psyops and, I mean, the covert operations through CIA, through the U.S. Agency for International Development and whatnot. And they stir up all kinds of confusion. It's what we refer to as both hard and soft power. The hard power is when they'll just outright invade your country and do things, you know. And then the soft power is the, you know, sending, you know, in money and, you know, technicians and whatnot to train and to co-opt
regime change
operations, mm-hmm. to co-opt citizens to work against their own and to destabilize the country to make it untenable. But then also the other part of that soft power is to propagandize domestically in the U.S. And so they can, you know, they can have somebody, some, you know, right wing Venezuelan who comes and says, I speak for Venezuelans and it's so awful there and da da da. And then people here, they think they're hearing some credible source. And it's not because, well, he's from Venezuela. Sometimes they'll even say, and I'm sure, well, you may not get it like us, because I might get it because I'm not seen as, you know, Latino or speaking Spanish.
You get it in translation.
Right. I get, you know, you don't, I
get
know.
It in translation. Right. But it's just as ugly.
I know Venezuelans, and they say this and that. It's like, well, they don't know that I know Venezuelans too. I know Nicaraguans and Cuba, and I've been to all these countries myself, but they don't know. So they're going to tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, because of them being from there. I'm from there. My uncle, you know, was persecuted, and he was da da da, something like that, right? And mm-hmm. and we have to begin to cultivate.
And you look at their skin, and you look at their eyes. They have blue eyes. They have
most of the time, hair, all the time,
white skin. Right. They don't look like Chavez. They don't look like.
They don't look right. Yeah, and people don't think about that. You know, when they, I have the what you call the defenses to not accept such propaganda, but a lot of people don't, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. I hear people that tell me, so I've met this person from, and they might hear what I'm saying or what, something like what you're saying and say, well, what about this person I met? And they said this. So they're, it's confusing to them because they're encountering somebody who's speaking for the people. And so
please,
we have
no.
to, yeah.
NEPTA, we only have 3 minutes left. So I'm going to ask you in two minutes, if you could tell us, what do you project is going to happen in Venezuela on the 26th, and why? Why mm-hmm. is it that the revolution will continue?
I think the polls are telling us, and also it's not just polls, but, you know, Maduro is going to win, and,
yes.
and all of the, and I think the more local elections are also going to see a Bolivarian process continue, because mm-hmm. I think that people can see, first of all, the internationally, the credit and the machinations of imperialism are exposed. So Venezuelans know the National Endowment for Democracy is in their country. They know Juan Guaido was a fake. And I mean, they just know that these things happen. And they also know, because what we talked about the participatory democracy in their countries, that they have been involved in projects that they see and they don't want to see that reverse. And so they know more that the difficulties and challenges that they're encountering, while not absolving and saying everything's perfect inside in any country, nothing's perfect anywhere, but they know most of it is external forces trying to overthrow their example.
You know, we could keep on going. Unfortunately, we are coming out on time. I want to invite our listeners to tune in because a lot of our comrades here at WBAI are following what's going on in Venezuela. This week, we also have the celebration of July 26th, which is the Cuban Democrada, you know, and everything else. So the People's Forum, they're putting a lot of programs in. They have films. They have art making. So I want to invite you to stay tuned to WBAI and listen to other things that are happening in the revolutionary world. But I also want to invite you before we go to please support WBAI by going to WBAI.org and then donate to WBAI.
Andrea, I just need to read this message. It's so important. It's for NEPFA. Can I say it? And it comes from Reggie. Really quickly, he says, I appreciate the discussion you are having with NEPFA. The political system here in this country is an illusion, a poorly executed form of kabuki theater. Oh my goodness. I like the humor. I think the humor is important. NEPFA, you know that in Latin America, we have a lot of humor. It's good to have a good laugh about these things because if you let them get to you, we can go crazy. I appreciate this conversation. Please let's have more of these before November because I'm sure the theatrical scene is going to get more and more interesting and we need to give people some tools, okay?
Thank you so much.
Go ahead, Andrea.
Thanks for what you're doing. Thank you so much, Reggie, for being with us. Our salute to everyone at WBAI, to our listeners. We'll be back next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for the Venezuelan elections on Sunday. On Tuesday, we'll bring results and we'll bring an update on what's going on. Until then, we invite you to resist.
Participatory democracy, not representative.
Un canto por la América Unida. Mira, que lo escuchan ahí arriba. Vamos. Somos la tierra, somos la arcilla, la esperanza que brota y germina. 500 años nos han pisoteado, aquí seguimos, de aquí no nos vamos.
Check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing. Tune in to Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
This place playwright on Tuesday, July 23rd at 9 p.m. We'll be joined by critically acclaimed comics creator Lucy Nisley to discuss her new graphic novel, Whoa, a house cat story of despair, starring the super fluffy and hyper-dramatic cat, Linny.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Hey, do cats drink coffee?
When their human is too damn busy reading comics about another cat.
Just as I thought.
On Wednesday, July 24th at 11 a.m., people are gathering from around the country to surround the U.S. Capitol and demand the arrest of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for war crimes in Gaza. In a new low for Congress, it is inviting Netanyahu, the subject of a warrant request at the International Criminal Court, to speak. This is at the same time that he is committing a genocide. Tens of thousands of Palestinians, overwhelmingly women and children, have been murdered, and schools, hospitals, houses of worship, and residential neighborhoods have been leveled by increased bombardment by Israel, which is also blocking food, water, and medicine in a siege of starvation and death. On July 24th at 11 a.m., the American people will surround the U.S. Capitol and demand the arrest of Netanyahu. More information, including about transportation, is at shutitdownforpalestine.org. That's shutitdown4palestine.org.
Hi, I'm Jillian Jonas, senior producer of WBAI's Living for the City, a weekly public affairs show covering national and hyperlocal issues. I was privileged to have worked at the legendary club CBGB, the birthplace of punk rock, in between college and grad school.